After some pleasant responses to their speeches, Johnny got right down to it. "I can't leave you here," he said and pointed at the sky. "And you can't leave any you have left at home." Oh, they surely agreed with that. Johnny looked at their firelit faces as they sat in their different groups. "It is cold in these mountains." They certainly agreed with that, particularly the Chinese. "There apparently isn't much food." Oh, he was so very right. Lord Johnny was very perceptive, and he knew how thin their children were. "There are ways you can help. Ways you can help to defeat the cyclos, possibly forever if they come back. Ways you can help defeat the aliens in the sky." One could have heard a snowflake fall. It was so still. He thought they hadn't understood him. He opened his mouth to repeat, and this orderly throng became totally disorderly. Forgotten were manners. They surged forward. They pressed so tightly close to him, he had to stand up. Only one eager question was being roared at him now in at least three tongues.
"How? How can we help?"
These beaten people, these ragged, starved remnants of once great nations, had not really dreamed they could be of value, that they could assist, that they might have a role to play besides to hide and starve. It was a mind-shattering thought, to help. The coordinators and chiefs somehow got them back in their places around the fire, but they couldn't sit down. They were too excited. When Johnny could speak again, it was into a new stillness. But he suddenly realized he might have more audience than he intended. Could the visitors upstairs monitor this? Probably. He held a hurried consultation, low-voiced, with a senior coordinator. "Yes," the man whispered back. "There was a large hall beneath the palace. It had been cleaned out." Johnny spoke to Chief Monk Ananda. Wild-eyed with excitement, the Buddhists went into the hall. Johnny got a mind light from the plane. He closed the door. This was an atmosphere they loved. Johnny spoke to them very quietly. They spoke Cyclo. They spoke Pali, a dead language. They also spoke some tongue known as Tibetan. "Yes," they whispered back. Johnny told them he would see their library was flown out to a safe place. They could have a deep section of the Russian base for it and their temple. But were they afraid of heights? They laughed. That was a silly question to ask mountain people. Did they mind being scattered all over the globe and living with other tribes? No, that was fine. They were not really withdrawn from the world just because they lived in a monastery. They had to live in the caves because of danger. He told them what a communicator was. If people gave them a message in Cyclo, they could put it on the radio in Pali, and the Buddhist at the other end could put it back into Cyclo. And the enemies upstairs would never understand. They thought it was marvelous. A whole worldwide Pali-speaking network. Yes, yes, yes. But now there was a sobering thought. At some time, one of them might be captured and made to give messages. And if so, they would give the messages in Tibetan, and that was their secret. It was dangerous. All life was dangerous. They accepted, every man, woman, and child of them, and accepted for the ones at home, too. Johnny tried to tell them their pay would be a credit a day, which was fair pay in most tribes, but he didn't get a chance. They would go, and that was that. And they knew it was a secret, and they would tell nobody. They even tiptoed out the door. The next were the Sherpas. There was a lot of hunting to be done. There were even occasional peaks to climb elsewhere. There were huge plains in Russia teeming with sheep and cattle. There was an awful lot of meat drying and preserving to be done. Could they, all of them, go to Russia and help stock that base with food? Food? They themselves were starving. Yes, indeed, they would hunt and stock the base with food. Then Chief Chang Wan brought in his people. Secrecy was a breath of life to them. Johnny began by telling them there was a place that was not too healthy, that had a fly that carried a sickness, but proper precautions and nets could handle it. There were also savage beasts, but there would be armed guards, and they too could learn to shoot. Insects? Beasts? They didn't care about those. Where was this place? What did he want them to do? they would leave right away. Was it a far walk? Johnny told them they would go by plane. But there was another thing. Although the place was a mile high, it could be hot there.
Hot?
A place that was hot? How marvelous! How absolutely marvelous! Who cared how hot? Johnny asked them whether they could build things. They proudly told him they had kept up their studies. Some of them were engineers. They could build anything. Now, all this was very secret, said Johnny, but he had a place near a large power dam that had to be cleared up and cleaned out, and the hills dug into and bunkers made. They would get technical assistance. They would even get machines and operators, and could themselves learn. They had 8 trainees over in America right now learning about machines. Why were they delaying here talking? Where was this place? Johnny told them they would get a credit a day each and bonuses for completions, and they could have land afterward. Chief Chong Wan asked the people whether they agreed, and they thought he was just delaying things. Of course they agreed. Johnny returned to the celebration, but it was not a celebration now. Little groups had their heads together, working it all out, but whispering and in incomprehensible tongues. Johnny told them good night, and they all faced him and bowed, and he bowed back. En route to pass the night in his plane, just in case, he stopped by the ore carrier where the Tallnap lay. He had an impulse to call Half-Captain Rogo Dieter Snowl and chew on him, but he didn't. Let the Half-Captain stew. That was a future battle.